Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, across the world and the universe. Welcome to my Quantum Living Podcast, at the intersection of science and spirituality. I'm your host, Anna Anderson. An inquisitive soul on a lifetime mission to find out how life really works. This podcast is about bringing the spiritual, metaphysical, and esoteric concepts down to the practical level, so that we can learn and apply them in our daily life to make it a little easier and raise our consciousness to the next level. Whether you are listening to this show while driving or commuting, doing chores around the house, relaxing on a couch, or flying in a spaceship across the galaxy, I hope you'll enjoy today's episode. Okay, let's begin. Hello and welcome back to Quantum Living. If you follow my podcast, you would have listened to quite a few episodes focused on health and healing, and I promise you there will be many more. Today's episode, however, is different in that it outlines a scientific validation of spontaneous or miraculous healing, providing a blueprint for conscious self-healing as a natural and expected function of the body, governed by our spiritual self. The greatest secrets of life are often hidden in plain view and are embedded in the simplest phenomena all around us. All we need to do is to recognize and embrace them as the birthright of our multidimensional being. To explore this fascinating topic, I have invited Joseph Selby, the author of the amazing book, The Physics of Miraculous Healing, to explore this simple yet powerful dimension at the intersection of science and spirituality. Joseph is an author, speaker, and researcher. A polymath, Joseph is known for creating bridges of understanding between the modern evidence-based discoveries of science and the timeless, experience-based discoveries of the mystics. He is the author of several books, including The Physics of God, and Breakthrough the Limits of the Brain. And of course, The Physics of Miraculous Healing, which is his latest book published this year that we'll be drawing on in this conversation. A dedicated Kriya Yoga meditator for over 50 years, Joseph has taught yoga, meditation, and universal experiential spirituality throughout the US and Europe. In 1975, Joseph became a member of Ananda, a spiritual movement inspired by the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. You will find more information about Joseph and his work on my podcast website at quantumlivingpodcast.com. Hello, Joseph. Welcome to Quantum Living. It's a pleasure to have you on my show.
A pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
I first came across your work on Gaia Open Minds with Regina Meredith. I think it was about a year or maybe even a couple of years ago. I really enjoyed the interview, and what stood out for me was your very unassuming and humble approach to sharing your powerful insights and findings from your work. So I was very happy when our paths have crossed again and that now we can talk about it on my show. So thank you so much for your time. To set the scene for our conversation, could you please share with us briefly your personal journey that has led you to this point?
Well, the most remarkable thing that has enlivened, informed, motivated my journey was the discovery of Paramahansa Yogananda's teachings when I was in college. And it coincided with a hallucinogenic experience that I had in my generation. There was a lot of experimentation with hallucinogenic drugs, tripping, and I had explored that a lot. Recreational drugs, as they were often called back then. But I had one extraordinary experience that was qualitatively different than any other I had been on. And I felt myself connected to something much deeper than anything I had ever experienced before. I felt a sense of joy. I felt a deep sense of peace. I felt completely safe. And in a way, I felt loved, even though it wasn't by another person as we normally think we're loved. And it was an extraordinary 8, 10, 12 hours. The results of it lasted for days afterwards. And I realized through that experience that it wasn't the drug that I had experienced. It was something about myself, something about a deeper consciousness to which I had access. And this really put my feet firmly, on the path of Yogananda's teachings. I had already been meditating for a bit, but this put it all together for me as this was my direction in life. And one step after another, I ended up becoming a part of the Ananda community, Ananda movement, which now has communities and centers all over the world. And it also introduced me to Yogananda's autobiography of a yogi. And the fact that in his autobiography of a yogi, he described spiritual experience. He described the sort of mechanisms of creation, the foundations of reality, often using Western scientific vernacular. And I was so captivated by that and pleased by that because I had been raised in a family of scientific thinkers, and I had gone to college to become, learned in some particular scientific discipline. It was molecular biology at the time. And so I was very pleased to know that I could embrace these deep spiritual teachings without having to give up Western science and understanding and appreciation of Western science. And for many, many years, that was a avocation. It was a hobby. It was just something I loved to read about. And then later in my journey, I actually got to start writing these books that you mentioned, which really draw together spiritual teachings and scientific discovery, which I have come to appreciate are far from being in conflict, but are very much congruent.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing. What a lovely story and very powerful. And what I find interesting is that you were able to differentiate that your experience at the time was not induced by the drugs that you used, but you felt very clearly that it was much more than that. So thank you.
Yeah, it felt like a gift. It felt like the divine was waking me up a little bit to embrace those teachings more deeply. So it was a turning point in my life.
Beautiful, thank you. As a broad overview from me, I would like to explore your beautifully crafted evidence of self-healing as an inherent aspect of this experience we call life, with the three keys unlocking that innate soul potential, emotions, beliefs, and connection to spirit. Drawing, of course, on your latest book that I've mentioned, The Physics of Miraculous Healing, which I have to say I highly, highly recommend. It is beautifully written and in such an accessible way, talking about fairly complex concepts that anyone can understand and enjoy. So thank you for writing this beautiful book. And by the way, my listeners are well seasoned in these topics, so we can venture to deep rabbit holes and out on a limb as far as we can. Okay, so let's start our exploration. What does quantum science reveal about the nature of reality, including our bodies, as holographic information patterns that can be changed? Or to put it differently, on what grounds can we accept that there is no disease or illness that is incurable?
Well, let me start with one step before quantum physics and address the most seminal discovery of the 20th century, most seminal discovery in physics, which is that matter is composed of energy. And this is known as special relativity. And we know from Albert Einstein and his amazingly elegant and succinct equation E equals mc squared that matter is basically an illusion. There is no matter. There are no indivisibly tiny balls of matter, whether they be atoms or subatomic particles or whatever. The deeper scientists probe into the atom, the more they find energy interacting with energy and that there is no matter, that matter is energy behaving in coherent, stable patterns that then interact with other energies behaving in stable patterns. So that is our first glimpse, I think, of how extraordinary healing is possible, according to modern medicine, which is still based on a what's called a classical physics foundation, which is incidentally 100 years out of date. But according to modern medicine, extraordinarily rapid healing just isn't possible. That atoms and molecules, as they understand their potential behaviors, can't change fast enough for that to be possible. So you see modern medicine either ignoring miraculous healing or extraordinarily rapid healing, or simply assuming it's some kind of misdiagnosis or fraud or isn't really a true case because it's impossible. It's an argument in a circle. But there are many, many verified cases of extraordinarily rapid healing, and they represent sort of the anomaly, just in the same way that Einstein's anomaly that the speed of light was constant. This was the anomaly that led him to the discovery, the understanding that it is so because all matter is energy. The two are intertwined. So what miraculous healing tells us is not only is energy the foundation of our physical form, but that it is mutable. It is changeable in a much more rapid way than is energy when it's behaving as matter. So, what quantum physics has brought to this picture is that in experiments that they conducted early in the 1920s and on into the 1930s, they discovered that not only is matter only energy behaving in stable patterns, but there are times when that energy behaves purely as energy. And this came to be known as particle wave duality, that underlying this reality that we perceive through our senses is a deeper reality in which there is nothing but energy. There is a level at which reality in which the energy behaves like waves rather than matter. And it has this Jekyll Hyde ability to move back and forth between those two behaviors. So not only are our bodies fundamentally made of energy, that energy routinely changes from the behavior of matter to the behavior of waves of energy and back again. And it's those waves of energy that are even more mutable, if you want to think of it that way, than just the fact that the energy is behaving as matter. The next sort of wave of understanding that came into modern physics after quantum physics is what's known as string theory and M theory. So M theory is a particular discipline within the broader discipline of string theory. But what string theory began to explore was, where does the energy go when it's not acting as matter? And where does it come from in another sense? Because according to the equations of quantum physics, even, there's far more energy in space than classical physics or even relativity says there should be. But according to the equations of quantum physics, this energy has to exist, and it's hugely more. It's 122 times as much energy available than what relativity perceives in the function of the physical universe. But why was this not known? And what they inevitably began to understand is that most of the energy that comprises the physical universe comes from another realm, what's called a non-local realm. Now, non-locality is an unfortunate name because it's not immediately apparent to the most of us what it could mean. You know, non-local, what's that? But it was coined in physics to contrast local reality from these strange things like entanglement and the observer paradox and other aspects of quantum physics that didn't behave in a way that normal things in our world that we perceive by the senses behave. And so they began to understand not only is there this other behavior possible, but that most of the foundation of our physical universe is in this non-local realm. And this non-local realm is pure energy. There is no space in non-locality. Therefore, there is no distance. There's no time in non-locality. Now, if you're conversant with most spiritual teachings, these kind of statements will be ringing bells for you because this is also the foundation of the notion that there are astral regions that are pure energy and they are full of, you know, luminous life and awareness. Physics came to it for a completely different reason, but supports that notion. So then there's one more step to explore to answer your initial question, which is what M theory has discovered and made as their kind of foundational principle. M theory, as I say, is just a very distinct subset of string theory, and it is the most accepted, the most recognized discipline within string theory. You might call it the farthest frontier of physics. And what M theory has discovered through its basically mathematical exploration of reality is that not only is non-locality the source of the vast majority of energy that it takes to create the physical universe, it's also the location of the holographic template for all of the physical universe. Or another way to put it, it's the source of the information that informs the holographic process, which then holographically projects the physical universe into being. Now, this sounds probably really far-fetched, just extraordinarily, amazingly out of left field for people who think of our physical universe as being this unchanging form that unfolds according to its own laws, but not that it's being continuously holographically projected from another realm, another pure energy realm. And it's that continuous holographic projection, and particularly emphasize the continuous, that gives us the biggest clue for miraculous healing or extraordinarily rapid healing. Because it implies that our physical bodies are also, being a part of this holographic projection, are also being continuously holographically projected. So every moment of every day of all of our life, our physical bodies are a holographic projection. So what it suggests, and we can explore this more, I'll wrap up here and let you ask another question. But what it implies is that if we change the hologram, if we change the information that is continuously creating our physical body, then we change the physical body. And because that information is part of a pure energy pattern, a subtle energy body, if you will, it is instantaneously mutable. And therefore, the physical body is instantaneously mutable.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for such a clear explanation of the whole concept where one part links to another, reveals another and another. So this begs now the question, which I feel is the key to unlocking this self-healing miraculous phenomenon. And the key is, how can we change our holographic projection, hence our blueprint, to reorganize the information about our health and healing in a way that it will improve. And I'd like to quote from your book here. Our strongest beliefs about our health are self-fulfilling. They directly influence the template that is our hologram, subtle energy body. This template directs intelligently guided subtle energy to holographically project atoms and molecules that conform to what we deeply believe to be true. So in your book, you propose that there are three key elements that we can use in our daily life in a very practical way to induce self-healing or miraculous healing. And that is our emotions, beliefs, and connection to spirit. Could you please speak to those three aspects, and how did you connect all three as being the main keys unlocking this phenomenon?
A lot of scientific evidence accessible to modern medicine already supports the effect that emotions and beliefs have on our health. There are a lot of studies that indicate something in the neighborhood of 85, 90, I've even read 95% of all illnesses are caused by stress. Now, what is stress? A lot of people might think that stress is being busy or being, you know, industrious or having to work hard or having to do a lot of things. But there are a lot of people who are industrious, work hard, demonstrate almost unlimited energy, who do not experience stress. So what is stress? Well, stress, in the simplest terms, is an inner emotional resistance to what we have to do, or what we've decided to do. It can be either. and that we create a lot of emotional friction, if you will, to that process. So it may be that that emotion comes out in a sense of resentment about what we have to do, or that emotion comes out at anger towards other people who get in the way of what we have to do, or we think we have to do. It may come as sadness or even despair because what we think we have to do or need to do isn't happening the way we want to do. So we create a lot of emotional turbulence going through our lives. And that emotional turbulence is acknowledged by modern medicine even to be the main cause of almost all diseases. But modern medicine doesn't know why. It only knows that it does. It's just a clinical finding rather than understanding the deeper mechanism for why emotion, which, again, according to modern medicine's model, is just an emergent property of the brain, that it's evanescent and that has no real connection to matter. So how can that, both those be true? How can emotions be responsible for most illness and yet at the same time be this disconnected reality for us? And the deeper truth is that emotions exist, they originate in our subtle energy body, and that our physical body is affected by them dramatically, but the physical body doesn't create them. And this is why modern medicine can't see the connection. But when we make the connection at the steeper level through M-Theory's holographic idea, you can think of your subtle energy body as almost like ringing like a bell when an emotion occurs in the subtle energy body, and it reverberates through your subtle energy body, which at a level beyond sensory perception also resonates through every atom and molecule in your physical body. Now, if you have a, you know, an occasional negative emotion and it reverberates through your energy body and therefore through your physical body, as long as you return to a more habitual, normal state of positive emotion, it won't really do much. Your body will quickly, you know, recover from that reverberation of negative energy. But if we harbor negative emotion, if we maintain a sadness, or we maintain an anger, or we maintain grief for weeks to months to years, it creates a permanent distorted pattern in our subtle energy body. And that permanent subtle pattern is reflected in our physical body by the breakdown of cellular function. And if we have that breakdown of cellular function indefinitely, it leads to the breakdown of tissues, it leads to what we think of as the pathology of disease. So take diabetes, for example. Modern doctors know that diabetes is caused by the body no longer producing insulin, but they don't really know why the cells that should be producing insulin stop doing it. But a metaphysician looking at your subtle energy body would see that in the area of your subtle energy body that corresponds to the pancreas, you have this continuous distorted energy, and therefore those cells are no longer intelligently able to produce insulin at the quantity and at the time when it's needed to be produced, and therefore you come down with diabetes. Modern medicine can treat this by giving us artificial insulin to inject into our bodies at the right time to match digestive needs, etc. But modern medicine can't make those cells start to produce insulin again. But we can, and by extension, we can for any disease, up to and including terminal cancer, by developing positive emotions, which reform those intelligently guided patterns of energy in our subtle energy bodies, which will then form functioning cells again, rather than continuing this distorted behavior that leads to disease. So this is why emotions are so powerful. Positive emotions keep us healthy, but negative emotions cause this kind of cellular breakdown when harbored, when experienced for long periods of time. So let me give you a chance to break in with a question if you have one before moving on to the power of beliefs.
Thank you very much for this explanation. I absolutely agree with you with what you have said, what's happening at the etheric level or between our etheric body template and our physical body. I totally agree with that. But I would like to offer a couple of additional points to what you have just shared with us. To the topic of stress. In fact, this is one of my topics of interest, and I have written about stress and I deal with stress in my own work with clients. So, firstly, in terms of the causes of stress, apart from, or maybe in addition to, negative emotions and resentment and unwillingness to go ahead with our tasks at hand, I would add an overwhelm. An overwhelm is created when we have too many things to do of similar priority within an insufficient amount of time. And our brain is freaking out, not knowing what to start first or where to start first. So this creates an overwhelm. Now, my second point, which is perhaps more important, is that there is a physiological link between stress and the negative impact on the physical body, and that is stress hormones. So the emotion, negative emotion of stress that we can broadly call stress, causes the body to release stress hormones. And these stress hormones are the physical elements that negatively affect our tissues and cells and organs. If this situation develops into a chronic stress, so not just one-off that we can recover from, but a chronic stress, which means that the body produces those stress hormones pretty much on an ongoing basis, those stress hormones erode our cells and tissues and organs to the point that they undermine their normal functioning. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree completely. Giving more detail, helpful detail, to what I think of as the pathology of diseases, the pathology of how physical breakdown occurs. And so I completely agree. I think overwhelm is a good one to remind people of, but I would just add that again, that it's overwhelm is an emotion. You never really have more to do than you can do because you can only do one thing at a time. But overwhelm, I think, is the emotion of perhaps you're panicking because you think you have to do all these things at once. Or the emotion, if it goes on and on and on for days, weeks, months, years, of a kind of hopelessness that you can ever rise above this, wave of things that are pushing you along. You feel more like you're the effect of your life rather than the cause of your life, that you never can get ahead. You can never find that clear moment of pause to reflect and get centered in your life. And that can, in fact, make you feel hopeless. So I think it's perhaps the biggest negative consequence of modern society, that there are just so many things that we expect to be able to do to live busy modern lives. And people don't always count the cost of doing all that to have what seems like, a goal that will make them happy, when in fact they're making themselves unhappy and unhealthy in that expectation. So it's a very real thing. But the root is still the emotion. And then the emotion kicks these pathologies in, and you get the stress hormones. And on an even deeper level, it changes your DNA. So there are studies that show when people are chronically feeling this kind of stress, that certain parts of their DNA will activate that actually cause tumors. It's a frightening thought, but your body is obligingly doing what your subtle energy body is telling it wants to do. Now, this may not be a conscious thought. None of us want to create tumors. But at the same time, at a deeper level, you're telling your subtle energy body that you want this kind of thing to happen, and your physical body will oblige. So we are incredibly powerful in our emotions. We're even more powerful in our beliefs, if you allow me to segue into that now. We see in, again, in modern science, modern medicine, our beliefs at work all the time. And one of the most common ways, it's sort of by its very familiarity, has lost some of its impact. But the placebo effect is a constant reminder that our minds and what we believe are more powerful than what is happening from the outside in, medicines and food, et cetera, coming into the body are nowhere near as powerful as what we believe can and will happen as a result of those things. So, with the placebo effect, one of the things that we commonly see is that in these trials where placebos are clinically given to people, is that they perform close to, sometimes better than, sometimes slightly less than, but very close to what people expect that drug will do for them. So one person will get a sugar pill, one person will get the actual medicine that's being trialed, and the positive results between both of those are almost the same. That is astonishing in and of itself. People who have been given placebo chemotherapy will improve, overcome their own cancer. And they're not allowed in these trials unless they have similar conditions that are needing to be treated. So they actually see an improvement for, life-threatening diseases. But my favorite story of all, my favorite study of all, was from a study done by the British Cancer Group of gastrointestinal cancer patients. And they were given the usual setup where you had the placebo group and the non-placebo group and a control group. And this trial went on for months because this is how chemotherapy works. It's given a little bit at a time over 6 weeks to 6 months. And in this particular trial, it lasted for over 2 months. And 30% of the people who were given the placebo lost all their hair because they believed that when you take chemotherapy drugs, people often lose all their hair. Absolutely no chemical, biochemical reason for them to lose all their hair in a placebo study like that. So even more amazing examples of the power of belief come to us from multiple personality disorder cases. And most people understand that multiple personality disorder involves, as the name implies, different personalities coming and going in one person. But what is less known is that as those personalities come and go, so do physiological changes. So some people, some personalities within that person will have moles or scars that other personalities don't have. And those moles and scars will disappear when that personality disappears. Hands down, the most astonishing example of that is a woman who came to her therapist with 10 personalities, and she was blind. She was blind from birth. And over the years of therapy she received, one after another, 9 of 10 of her personalities, when they were in the driver's seat, so to speak, could see to various degrees. But personality one, if you will, never was able to see. Now, this is astonishing in and of itself, but think about the fact that these personalities keep coming and going. So the same physical body that is hosting these personalities will go from partially blind to completely blind to partially blind to completely blind in a matter of minutes. And they've tested this woman using what's called visually evoked potential, where they have her wired up to a EEG net on her head, and then they shine intense light into her eyes. And when that blind personality, completely blind personality number one, is in charge, there is absolutely no response in the brain. There's no neurons that fire having to do with her visual pathways. So that is impossible to fake. So what it means is that in minutes, perhaps a billion neurons have to change in her brain for either sight to come or sight go. So what is the difference between all these different personalities? It's the degree to which they believe in their own ability to see or not to see. This is astonishingly powerful. Now, many people ask immediately, well, why don't we have that power ourselves? And the answer is we do. But our beliefs are very deeply rooted. They're really beyond our conscious awareness. And when we get up in the morning and look in the mirror, the person we expect to see in that mirror is the person we deeply believe we are. And the degree of health we have is completely a matter of what we believe that health to be. Now, our beliefs get conditioned in various ways. One of it is the feedback between what our physical body experiences on a day-to-day basis that we accept to be true and believe. But at its root, it means that if we can change our own belief in our health, then we can change our health at fundamental levels.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for sharing this case study. I am familiar with it, and I believe that even one of those 10 personalities had perfect eyesight. This potentially could be a different case, but absolutely amazing and really so empowering once we can embrace this knowledge. Now, before we move on to the third element, which is connection to spirit, I would like at this point to take this conversation to a higher level and talk about intention. Now, intention is emotion plus thought plus belief, formulating as an intention for us to move forward or to take action or to expect something to happen. So let's talk about the power of intention. The observer effect and the wave-particle duality in quantum physics, as the scientific evidence, validate the power of intention. But my question here is this. If that's the case, why does it work in terms of the power of intention for some people in some situations, but not for others or in different situations? And even if we apply all three ingredients, emotions, beliefs, and connection with the spirit, why this still doesn't work in all instances? And I would like to mention a particular case that I am well familiar with of a young woman who was in perfect health, and one day, out of a sudden, she got a diagnosis of stage 4 lung cancer. When she one day got out of breath, then she went to hospital, she had a collapsed lung, and further investigations confirmed that she had stage 4 lung cancer. Now, that particular person was very spiritually and scientifically informed and engaged. And so, in addition to obviously medical intervention, she engaged and applied all possible forms of self-healing she could access. So not only obviously special nutrition and herbs, various alternative therapies, but she worked in her mind on changing because she understood the process completely. She worked intensively in her own mind on changing her template of her health. And she also had dozens, if not hundreds of people around the world, because she was a member of a particular group, many people around the world praying for her and sending her healing intention, etc. So she has done everything she possibly could have within her very broad and very deep understanding of how this works with the help of many other people. She was able to postpone, I guess, the inevitable. She went into remission for a few months, but then the cancer came back with vengeance, went to her brain, and within a couple of months, she died. The reason this case is so curious is that she has applied all that we've been talking about and more, not only by herself, but also with the help of hundreds of people around the world. And yet nothing has changed her, I guess, destiny to die of that cancer. So my question is, once again, why this protocol, let's call it this way, works in some cases for some people and not for others, or even the same people in other cases? Is it our destiny that cannot be changed, which adds, if you like, another important ingredient to this conversation? What are your thoughts, please?
That's an excellent question. And I think it is one that I get asked all the time, because when I'm putting out these principles, it sounds straightforward. Improve your emotions, change your beliefs, connect to spirit, and in, you know, short order, you should be well and feeling well. But the roots of our emotions and the roots of our beliefs run very deep. So I don't know this woman, so I won't really speak to her particular situation. But I've, you know, been asked this, and I've worked with people, and I've seen people who have done exactly what you say, you know, that they're high-minded people, spiritually minded people, and they just out of the blue get cancer. I guess I have two answers, maybe more. But one answer is it's hard to be aware of the depth of our own emotions. It's not as if they're on the surface all the time. They're held deep, and oftentimes we would be the last person to think that we were holding such an emotion, that we have so effectively, in a way, masked it or affirmed another emotion that has screened us from it. I think that this is quite possible for us to have this level of complexity where we don't understand our own emotions. And so even though we are trying to overcome those negative emotions, we don't have a real feeling for them to know whether we're affecting them or not. One of the things that I actually counsel people is to not try to get at the negative emotions, but to create a powerful tide of positive emotions that lift us up. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, well, you're just suppressing emotions that way, that you're asking people to pretend that they don't have negative emotions. And that would be the case if your positive emotions did not become more powerful than any negative emotions you can have. And how you get there is linked deeply to the third avenue of what we need to do, which is the connection to spirit, to a tapping into our soul nature, tapping into the fact that we are pure, powerful bliss. And when we are in that state, it's as if we can draw that negative energy out of those negative emotions without having to sort of grapple with them one to one or really even know them completely. This achieving this high level of emotional joy is not simple, and it can be something that is deeply rewarding but also challenging to attain for a number of reasons, which I can get into again. So that would be one answer to your question, that emotions are not necessarily easy for us to tune into and know, even in ourselves. You know, I know people who I know very well and I love and I care about, but in conversations and experiences with them, I get the feeling that there's a lack of awareness of what is driving their decisions or what is making them make choices that they're not aware of, and that I think it is, you know, some hidden emotional force for them. But there's another level of emotions that I believe is true. Not everybody believes it's true, which is that we have karma from the past, that we have previous lives. Now, karma, I think, is often misunderstood as being like a, you know, coming out of nowhere weird thing that we set up in the past and now it's happening in the present. But we create karma in one life. We set things in motion, let's say in our 20s, that don't bear fruit, whether that fruit is positive or negative, until we're in our 30s. We don't realize that what we set in motion in our 20s, might have a negative consequence. And so it's just as true that if we get sick in our 30s from something we set up in our 20s, that's just as much karma in a very real sense as if it's coming from a previous life where we set something up. The only difference, really, is that it's taking much longer for what we set up in a previous life or previous lives to manifest than between our age of 20 and 30 when we set up some other karma. So it's the same principle. And the reason why it can affect us now is because those karmas, those currents of emotion exist in our subtle energy body. When we die, the physical body goes away, but all of what we set in motion in that previous lifetime and is unfinished from that previous lifetime, good and bad, remains in the subtle energy body. So when we're reborn and we're working in a new physical body, those karmas, those emotions that we set in motion and will inevitably manifest in some way, positively or negatively, will manifest. So a lot of times when you have something good happen to you, you think, oh, I'm just lucky. But you may not just have, stumbled on that, but that you set that up in a past life and you're now reaping the benefit of whatever that was. And so too with negative things. So I think it's a mix of people not necessarily being aware of their emotions that can blindside them. Wonderful people, high-minded people, good people, giving people who can still get hit by their emotions because they're not as aware of them as they think they are, possibly. Or it definitely comes out of the blue in the sense that it comes from the past, the deep past, and its inevitable consequences are happening.
Thank you. Thank you. And I actually really like your answer. And what I'm hearing is that our karma becomes effectively our destiny. And in some scenarios, it will override our efforts to change the outcome, our health outcome, because it is so much stronger. And as you said, often embedded in those deeply seated beliefs and emotional states that we might not be even aware of. So it really does make sense. Thank you. So this now begs the question, why do you think it is so difficult for many people to truly, viscerally believe and accept that they can heal themselves? What needs to change in this paradigm so that we could fully benefit from this aspect, which I believe is our birthright? You call it innate soul powers. Effectively, I believe it is our birthright. So why is it so difficult for so many people to accept, yes, I can heal myself and I just need to go through the process, etc.? Why many people feel that they can't, or maybe even they shouldn't? Maybe some deeply religious people would not even attempt to change their destiny, which they believe is the will of God. What do you think?
Well, I think you're alluding to the deepest power that we have, which is that we are infinite, immortal beings. That we are one with the infinite spirit, and all the powers of the infinite spirit are our powers, our intellect, our feelings, our awareness of our self. They're all innate to us because we are so much more than we know. So connecting to spirit is what I think of as the most important soul power, not because it's, like plugging into the wall and getting extra current, which makes us extra able to heal, but because connecting to spirit awakens us to who and what we really are. When we meditate and we feel initially, maybe it's just a sense of peace, release, letting down, and that feels Good and wonderful. But if we keep going with meditation, meditate regularly and faithfully, that letting down and releasing grows into feeling joyful, into feeling that we exist beyond the physical body. It extends into sort of more existential liberation, that we are not these physical bodies that get old and die or get unwell and die. That's not who we are. We can be told that, but when you experience it directly in meditation or outside of meditation as well, but meditation is one of the most effective ways I know for people to have this experience, then you don't have to, kind of reach into a particular belief and try to change it or grapple with a particular emotion and try to improve it or make the negative one go away. When you feel and experience directly who and what you really are, those things change automatically. Your beliefs change automatically. Your emotions are elevated and lifted automatically. And quite apart from healing results and the self-healing that you might bring from that, you just feel wonderful. Your well-being just grows and grows and grows, and you feel a deep and abiding sense of all as it should be. My life is unfolding exactly as it should be. It doesn't mean you become indifferent to your life. You still need to do everything to make your life the best you can make it, but that the best that you can make it is exactly what you should be trying to do. That this is the life you were born to lead. This is the purpose you came into life, whether that was a challenging one, whether it was one full of overcoming diseases, whether it was one full of failures, successes. None of that really matters. It is that you are learning and growing and expanding in your soul nature through this life experience. And you can know that intellectually, right? But still feel a little bit of despair or unhappiness or, just wanting to make it all go away. But when you feel that in meditation, when you feel that in connecting to the divine and connecting to your soul, it has much more power than just knowing it intellectually. So it's one of the most common aspects of the experiences that people have who overcome terminal cancer, who fully overcome terminal cancer, not just get some relief from chemotherapy that extends their lives for a year or two, but that they really overcome it. One of the most common themes through all of them is they came to peace with who and what they are. They came to peace with spirit and their own soul, and were accepting of whatever would come.
Thank you for that. And you have actually answered my next, what was to be my next question, which perhaps your answer has made it redundant, but I will put it out there and I will put it to you anyway. Can we expand these principles of self-healing to our life beyond health and healing? For example, to increase our abundance, heal our relationships, create greater and more authentic success in business or career. So you have, as I've said, effectively answered this question, but is there anything else that you would like to add to it in the context of the question itself?
Well, I would quite simply say that there's nothing in our lives that our experience of doesn't improve when we experience spirit. Doesn't necessarily mean that magically everything goes as we wished it would go in our lives. Challenges can remain challenges, but we meet them. We meet the challenges in our lives with much greater concentration, energy, creativity, intuition, and we can improve everything that we're doing, even if our improvement is primarily experiential. Things that are challenging in our life, we may, from an outside observer, look like we're not gaining much ground. But when you bring intuition and creativity and concentration to those tasks, we feel better. We feel like the challenge is rewarding in and of itself because it is transforming us. It is changing us. And even if we don't succeed in, our greatest business goals, we grew and our sense of well-being grew along with it. So connecting to spirit or connecting to self is its own reward. Doesn't make everything else go away, doesn't fix everything else, but it makes us feel tremendously better about engaging in all of that, including overcoming health issues, than we would feel otherwise.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you so much for that. Now, I'd like to offer a somewhat quirky quirky proposition. Our concept and understanding of the body has gone over time from the mechanical to molecular machine driven by DNA to electromagnetic system, and finally to an organized bundle of quantum energy vibrating at various frequencies that supports life. Based on that, I believe that if the energy bundle you call your body suddenly and significantly change its frequency, you could instantly become a bird or a fox or any other animal or a fish. And this theory would explain many documented cases of morphing or shape-shifting from human to animal to bird and back to human. I mean, logically, at a glance, on the surface, it makes sense in terms of changing the frequency of your being. And obviously, it is a well out on the limb concept, but in my mind, it does make sense. And as I said, it would explain the many documented cases of morphing or shape-shifting that have been witnessed by other people. What are your thoughts on that? Let's go out on the limb here.
Well, I think potentially we can, in fact, take any form, but we have to have a, I believe, we have to have a very advanced awareness of our subtle energy body, and that awareness giving us control of the subtle energy body for such dramatic changes to be possible. But I also believe there are people, there are beings, there are advanced souls who have that kind of awareness, who can dematerialize at will, who can rematerialize in another place, in another time. So if they wanted to, yes, they could materialize as a bird or as any other creature. Why they would want to is another question, but I know that there are shamans who try to tune into their spirit familiars, such as ravens and other animals, and who in that attunement may be able to, may desire to make that change. I think the physical world is a much stranger place than people realize. that were locked into sensory perception for the most part. And if we rise above that and look at the world around us, we would probably see many things going on that we never noticed before or never would have thought were possible. I think our physical bodies, because they're being continuously, instantaneously projected, are also probably minutely changing in response to our thoughts, our feelings, our reactions to our environment. And if you could see that with the eyes of a saint or a psychic or an energy healer, you'd probably see all these magical changes happening in the physical body and reverting back the way they were instants later. And we would be these amazing bundles of energy, as you put it, but entrancingly wondrous. But because we can only see, or most of us, and I speak for myself, can only see through the senses, we don't see that. But for those people who rise above it enough to not only see it, but control it, there's really no limit to what they could decide to do in physical manifestation.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I have to say that the day when I learned that every electron in our physical body disappears and reappears, in other words, oscillates between this and another reality about 8 times per second, not all at the same time, obviously, because then we would disappear or be perceived as disappearing, but every electron in our body oscillates between the two realities. When it moves to another reality, it brings new information to this one and then takes information from this one, goes to another one. From that day when I learned about this, my understanding of the whole concept of self-healing and the availability to self-heal with our intention, emotion, beliefs, thought, has changed forever. Because as I understand, and we haven't even talked about it, and we don't really have much time left to talk about it, but just as a final comment on this, it is one of the, as I understand, phenomenon that has been proven by quantum science, quantum physics, that that's what's happening, which again confirms all that you've been talking about here, and you talk about in your book about the other reality, the non-local reality. And once again, I would like to encourage my listeners to get hold of your book and read, because it is a very good read, and you can learn so much from it out of all the many sources that you may have accessed. This is all put in one place and beautifully explained. So it is happening, it is important, and I really hope that as many people as possible will start finding out about this, learning these processes, and embracing and applying them in their lives. So thank you. To wrap it up, this whole beautiful conversation, Joseph, how can we learn to deliberately, consciously use our innate soul powers to heal? In a nutshell.
Well, start with the realization that you're using them now, that what you are in this moment is the result of those soul powers. And in appreciating that, I think it gives you more motivation to use them well, and that it's not a black and white on-off switch experience where you are self-healing yourself or you're not. You're always creating yourself, but you're creating yourself with the information that is informed by your emotions, your current emotions, negative or positive, your current beliefs, whether limited or unlimited, your current connection to the divine, whether strong or non-existent. And just take advantage of the reality of your own powers. Know that you're working them, just decide to work them better.
Lovely. Thank you. Well, Joseph, thank you so much for this beautiful conversation. As I said, very enlightening. How can people reach you and access your teachings in addition to your books? Do you offer any courses, classes, consultations?
I have a website, josephselby.com. And on that site, there are other articles. There are links to courses that I have taught on other subjects. I don't yet have a course on the subject of miraculous self-healing. I'm in the midst of working on that. But you can find out a lot more about me through that website. But I would urge people to understand that the best way to know more about me is really to read my books, because it's in those books that I offer the most insight that this life has given me.
Thank you. And obviously, I will include all the links on my podcast website and in the show notes so that people can find you and connect with you. Any final thought you would like to share with us before we close this conversation?
Meditate. If you don't already meditate, learn to meditate. If you do meditate, meditate more. Connect to spirit. It has all the effect you want to have happening in your life. It's really the foundation for joy, happiness, prosperity, satisfaction, and health.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Joseph. It's been such a pleasure to have you on Quantum Living.
My pleasure. It was a delightful conversation.
Thank you. That's all for today, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I would much appreciate if you could spare a moment and post a review on Apple Podcasts or on my website at quantumlivingpodcast.com, where you can also read the full show notes, guest info, reviews, and more. I'm your host, Anna Anderson. I look forward to connecting with you in the next episode of Quantum Living. Until then, keep your vibrations high and be well.